racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're about 13 into hour two on this Monday at the races here on SiriusXM. Just talked to Michael McCarthy, and Michael was on hand. I wasn't sure at first if he was there or not, and sure enough, there he was. And it looked like he was wearing a hat that he. I should have asked him this. Wearing a hat that he borrowed from Peter Miller, right? That Peter Miller wears that same that same kind of hat. Ron Moquette is always at Oaklawn, and when you send a horse out in four straight runnings of one race, and he's won three of the last four, it's an amazing accomplishment. And to have a horse get to this age and maintain his form the way he has, it's an incredible accomplishment. And Ron, for everybody involved, the people at Southern Springs and the La Penta team and Sol Cumin and his head of Plains Partners and you and the staff. And also we should mention John Leviakis, who bred this pleasantly perfect gelding, and who undoubtedly has enjoyed watching him perform these five seasons. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. We're very proud and humbled by the accomplishments of this cool horse.
You know, it's so funny because I think on Friday or maybe Thursday, might even been Wednesday, talking to Haskin, and I forget what Derby at the moment had come up, and I went to print, I went and pulled up the graded stake page, and I start looking, and I pull up his Derby, and I'm thinking, this is unbelievable. I mean, here he is at the age of seven, and he just on a regular basis, Ron, has brought his A game. I mean, he so rarely runs an off race.
Yep, he's very, very much an honest horse. He tells you what he wants to do, and if you listen to him and if you're keyed into him, he'll help you help him get to where we need to be. I think honesty and his effort is one of the things that he's going to be remembered by for a long time. The longevity is super cool, and that comes from a lot of people making a lot of right decisions and trying to always keep the horse's best interest at the forefront. And we're actually getting a shot, if we could ever get through this virus stuff and all that business, which we will, but there's a possibility that I'm going to get two 2-year-olds that we helped get last year that will come to me that are by horses that he ran against in the Derby. So, we've got a possibility to get a Nyquist and a Gun Runner, and they're going to be 2-year-olds that Whitmore ran against their sires in the Derby. That's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, and, you talk about making the right decisions, and we're sort of talking about him in I don't want to say in retrospect, in terms of looking back at the career before we talk about this race. And we'll come back to the race. But from that standpoint, for people that forgot, he broke his maiden at First Asking at Churchill, and then turned up, his only other start as a 2-year-old was at Delta. You went down, and that was an Exaggerator's Delta jackpot.
Yeah, we knew it was a little close, and we shipped him down there at the Bullring track. I never thought he got a shot to run that day, but it was that we'd done the same thing with Far Right, and we thought that was a good way to put some money in our pocket, and if he was going to be a route horse, it's a good transition. and we didn't work out for us that day. But we come back and started him back at Oaklawn and ended up running very well in the Derby. You know, the path to the Derby and the Oaklawn races in the Southwest and the Rebel, and you know, we run second to Cupid, one of the times of many that Baffert yanked our heart out, and we thought we was going to win the Rebel, and he brings in a you know, a well bred son of Tappet that went out there and we couldn't catch, and then we run third in the Derby, and actually we didn't go off as a long shot in the Kentucky Derby. We didn't run well, but I think he went off at 15-1, and that's pretty cool.
And I'm just looking at that section. You know, he has been managed so carefully and cleverly, and you know, the longest layoff of his career came between the Derby and then his return as a 4-year-old, and then you basically, for the 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, or you know, for the next seasons, you basically have kept to the same formula, giving him a good, you know, 75 to 120 day break, essentially, between the end of a season and getting geared up for Oaklawn the next year.
Yeah, I think that horses need time. I always believe that. I think if you want them to perform at a, you know, at a certain level, then you're going to have to give them time. And whenever I sold pieces of Whitmore after his first race, and thank goodness for my partnerships at Bottom, you know, we're very happy with Mr. Bob Lapenta and Saul, but they always said, you do what you feel is right for the horse. They've never once offered any kind of suggestion when it comes to Whitmore. And, you know, I knew that's in the ball's in my court. If it sinks or swims, it's up to me. So I've got to, you know, this is my chance to make my point and make the decision, you know, what I think is best. And whenever, you know, we get the results we do, it's funny that a lot of the other people are saying the same thing now. They're saying, you know, you do what you think is best for the horse. And I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, from that time off in the Derby, and it's funny, I remember seeing this jogs my memory that off the Derby you brought him back in New York at Aqueduct in December, and I can remember you and I, we must have had somebody else to talk about, there must have been something else, but it was notable that, you know, that he, that return race came in New York. What were the circumstances, Ron, that happened?
Well, the very first of the book, you know, we get a condition book to choose where we run our horses. And there was a race the very first day of the fall meet in Churchill. And they didn't get to the race. It didn't fill. There wasn't enough. So then Ben Huffman tried as best as he could to try to make the race go the entire meet. And it just never went. And I'm sitting there with a horse that's ready to run and nowhere to run. So I looked up and saw the race at Aqueduct, and I called my partners. I said, I know this is crazy, but if this race doesn't run the next time we enter it at Churchill, there's going to be no more options. We're going to have to sit on him until Oaklawn. Can I haul him to Aqueduct? And they said, you do whatever you want. We got in the race, and it worked out well.
That's pretty funny, and I bring it up because from that point, from that win at Aqueduct, he went on a five race win streak, and with this win on Saturday, this is the second longest win streak of his career. He's now won three straight, and other than that, he had only ever won two straight. Beside that group of races off of the comeback when he won an allowance, then he won January 15th at Oaklawn, the beginning of the meet. He wins the Hot Springs, the Count Fleet, and then that fun day at Pimlico, the Maryland Sprint. Five straight.
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. I mean, that's me being a fan of the sport, I love to be at the big races. You know, that's where, if you're in this game, you want to win the big stage, and you want to win
races that people recognize the names. That's my goal. And to win that race, which was an old race, and to win the Phoenix and the Forego and the Count Leap, all of these are, you know, they're races. I'm not saying that the Pegasus at Gulfstream doesn't mean a lot. I mean, obviously, with the financial implications, that race and the one in Saudi Arabia or Dubai, they all mean something. But to run in the races that are old and that you can recognize, you know, great horses winning, that means something too. And I was very proud of that because I wanted to win on that day.
It also, you go through that group of races, and it also indicates, you know, the kind of horse that he really is and his makeup, because I'm jotting these down as I scroll through and look at this, because after Pimlico, you went back to Belmont on Belmont Day, third in the True North, then to Laurel for the DeFrancis, to Keeneland for the Phoenix, which he wins, then the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar, and I think if I add in Saratoga for later, I think that is, and then, of course, the Breeders' Cup Sprint at Santa Anita, third last fall. So here it is. Churchill Downs, Delta Downs, Oak Lawn, Aqueduct, Pimlico, Belmont, Laurel, Keeneland, Del Mar, Saratoga, Santa Anita are the racetracks at which he's competed.
That's some good ones. If Bonner writes a good race, we might ease on over. Who knows?
Well, and I don't know if you were listening. Sometimes you're sitting in the truck during training. Did you hear when it's got Young on last week? And I was going to bring you up in case you grew up in pretty close proximity to Young.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that I grew up around a lot of the people that are from that area, and you know there's a lot of people that I cross paths with and I recognize, and they recognize me. But we were, you know, like Danny Caldwell, you know, one of the biggest owners out there for claiming, sure, and whatever. We actually, our basketball teams played against each other in high school. And, you know, there's been all kinds of people that but Scott is a guy that I've ran against, and I've watched him come up, and he's, you know, somebody from the old stomping grounds. I didn't get to spend much time with him when I was there, but I always root for those guys and want them to do well. There's a lot of really good horsemen come out of that area.
Well, and of course, I've kidded Ron for years for literally being born on the Arkansas, Oklahoma. He's an Oklahoman. He was born with straddling the state line of Arkansas, Oklahoma.
Yeah, and if you want to fast forward to the upper echelon of horse racing, thoroughbred racing, just tell them you're from the border of Arkansas, Oklahoma. They'll give you the best barns. They'll give you a huge array of clients. It really helps. Actually, not. But I wouldn't trade. I learned more about horses at you know, weekend rodeos and brush tracks, mm-hmm, and by the time I was 16 than you know, a lot of people are going to get, you know, just because they get one aspect of the horse whenever you come to the track. And there, you know, it wasn't a normal deal to see a horse do team roping on Thursday and then see the horse running in the last race on Sunday. I mean, you saw every type of things you could do with a horse happen in that area.
Well, and did you ever train some of those breeds, like paints and stuff?
My first win was an Appaloosa.
I was going to say, or Appaloosas. That's so great.
Yeah, and those are real fun to train. It's like, I don't know if you can come up. You know, the old saying is the reason that the Indians could fight so good was because they were good and mad by the time they got to the fight, was if they were riding paints and apps. So I can tell you this, they're fun animals to be around. They're not the most dependent, but they're very fun to be around.
Well, and you know, it's funny that the conversation went into this direction. But I also, you know, I let Scott kind of, you know, talk about his upbringing, and you know, he mentioned places like Blue Ribbon, and you must have run a Blue Ribbon.
Oh yeah, that's my first win was Blue Ribbon Downs.
And, how about that?
And you know, when I was there, Luke Kriposh was calling the races. Bob Baffert shipped a horse in to run in the Black Gold Futurity. Wayne Lucas had won two or three of them Futurity trials. I mean, it wasn't like Donnie K. Von Hemel would come over. Big Don Von Hemel was there. It wasn't like it was. You never knew who you were going to run into, you know. But there was a lot of good people come through that little that, you know, whatever kind of little track it was, but it was fun.
It was in Sallisaw.
Sallisaw, Oklahoma, yeah. It's about 35, 40 minutes from Fort Smith, Arkansas, which was the huge city that was closest to us. And you know, everyone there is horse. They love horses of all kinds. There's more, you know, there's as many trucks and trailers driving around that area as there is anywhere in the country.
I love it. Well, and you know, my experience just it came from going to Remington for the Oklahoma Classics night, and just getting to kind of soak in that that atmosphere. I mean, the Texas has it too, the culture of the horse, but you really when you're there and you see it and you can feel it. Really easy to appreciate, and that's what's so cool about a conversation with Whitmore and going into, you know, going into this Count Fleet. I mean, this field came together nicely, and you had to be happy with the kind of speed that was signed on. He was going to get some pace to chase, and talk a little bit about how you and Joe Talamo wanted to approach the race.
Well, what I said was I didn't know exactly if everybody was going to play their hand, you know, honestly. I didn't know if the speed horses was going to try to go. Some of the really good speed horses had been running 7/8, and then I thought the horse to beat was Mr. Sadler's horse, Flagstaff. I thought he was a very nice horse, and knowing the people that had the horses in there, Asmussen brings them ready to run. His horse was working really well, the nitrous horse. And I thought, you know, this race could shake up five or six different directions. And, you know, Whitmore did not get to run his typical race. He had to be a little closer to the front end than he wanted to be. If you look at his racing form, more close than he usually is. And the reason was, is I thought that if we'd experience traffic trouble late, then it wouldn't be to our benefit. So what I did was I asked him to understand we're on the outside. He doesn't enjoy being on the outside. He loses interest and he'll drift out. And I said, just make sure you just keep him as close as you can. And then when it's time to go, make a big premature bid and try to punch him. And then, you know, remember when he gets to the front, he pulls up a little bit, and it doesn't matter. I mean, this horse has had no works since the Kentucky Derby that there wasn't a horse to his outside. I do that on purpose, and it's strictly because if I go out there and work him by himself, he'll give me the middle finger and work how he wants. But I can control him a little bit if I have someone to his outside. So Joe knew all that, and I thought Joe did a very good job with the situation, a big full field. We had to go extra wide. Nobody was upset about that. We knew he was going to get a good trip from out there. But he didn't get to run the race that was probably something to showcase him. But I was just so freaking happy he won it for all the historical reasons. And, to live where I live and to come from where I come from. And it doesn't matter if I'd come from Lexington. You know, if you could say that you have the horse that's won more stakes races and Oaklawn's history, that's something that you want to be able to tell, and we can say that now, and that means everything to me.
three out of four, and it took Mattioli last year to keep him from being having won four straight.
Yeah, I text Scott Blasey, Steve's assistant. He texts me congratulations, which I'm overwhelmed with the people that appreciate this horse. You can win bigger races, and they give you, congratulations when they see you. But it's like the trainers and assistant trainers and people that deal with horses really love him and appreciate him. But Scott texts me, congrats. I love to see that old boy running and whatever. And I said, well, we're very tickled that Mattioli was somewhere, getting dates right now instead of in the field. So we had enough of Mattioli.
Well, there's quite a few horses on this list and the charts of the other Count Fleets and more that have had enough of Whitmore, undoubtedly, too. And, we should mention a couple of things out of this. I talked earlier about John Sadler's, really outstanding day Saturday, 2 seconds in the graded stakes, and then wins the nightcap as well with Curlin Rules. But I do want to mention Channing Hill and father-in-law Catman Wayne Catalano, and he checked in the other night with Wayne about Channing, who did not get to ride Maniwa, and Maniwa ends up third in here. Flagstaff had the out of the gate poorly, and then rallies nicely to be second, beaten three quarters. And in the meantime, Maniwa at 75-1, the longest shot on the board, and Corey Lannery got him up for third.
Yeah, that was cool. And if you know Catalano or Channing Hill, you root for them. They, they're good people. Channing, we're very, very happy to hear good reports about him. I was tickled to death. Once I saw us cross the finish line, I wanted to see where all my buddies finished, and I was tickled to death to see that horse run so well. I know that they liked him, and he went to California and ran well against some really good horses. So I was happy to see him get up and get a piece of it.
Yeah, and sent the update about he's got some hairline type fractures in the vertebrae, so he's going to have to sit out and let him heal up. But he's okay overall, knock on wood for Channing. And Ron, from this point, with the meet winding down, what's your thought? I don't think anybody really knows exactly where we're going from here, but. How do you proceed once we get past that first weekend in May?
Well, I do pretty well with a schedule and structure. I'm very good at that kind of stuff. So this floating around, not knowing where we're going, is kind of different for me. But I do know that I'm working my way back from the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland with Whitmore, and the rest of our horses. We're kind of waiting to see where they run. We've got a couple of really nice horses that's in our barn, and we're looking for a spot, but we kind of need some stuff to start falling into place. Just people standing up and say, look, this is where we're going to open. We're going to run this kind of meet. It's going to be an abbreviated. It's going to be without fans. Something needs to say something, because that way we can start making plans. Right now, it's just a lot of people working, taking care of horses, and we're going to do that regardless. But we would like to be able to kind of make a schedule. And I think that's coming in the next 2 weeks. We're going to enjoy the rest of the meet at Oaklawn. You spoke about Sadler and of course Whitey and all the people that come in. We've got crazy gambling here. I mean, it's amazing. And there's there's negative with this stuff, and then there's positive. The positive is there's unbelievable races if people want to consume it. There's not an easy race at Oaklawn Park right now. You look up, there'll be Peter Miller, Doug O'Neill, Baltus, Jeremiah Englehart. Of course, we always got Asmussen and Cox. They're tough. Zito, Pletcher, Lucas. I mean, they're all here. And every race means something. So for the next 2 weeks, we'll try to walk through that minefield and win as much as we can, and then get ready and see what the the rest of the world shakes out for us.
On that, I'm glad you brought up Nick. Nick was with us just the other day to talk about Hank Steinbrenner, his passing. But it's got to be fun for you to have Nick around, considering you know the time you spent working for him.
Well, I never worked for Nick. I was always buying his horses, and we gambled together. But
I didn't realize that. I thought you had a turn on the shed row with Nick.
No, what he would do is he would have a horse that wouldn't work where it was, and he would send that horse to me to try to mess with it and play with it and see if I could get it to improve geographically, you know. And so I worked with him, but I didn't work for him. You talk about a guy that's good for the sport. Between Lucas and Zito, I did a tweet here a while back that there really ought to be a spot on some of these panels on these network televisions, guest series, something, to where we get these guys up there, because there's nobody with as good a resume that has the passion, that has the likability that these two guys do. And I just think if Dickie Vitale and some of these guys, that Jimmy Johnson and these guys, can get on these network shows for their sports, we need to figure out a way to get those guys up there, because I promise you they're entertaining as well as knowledgeable. And that's what it's like having any conversation with Lucas or Zito. Quick-witted, they're super sharp, and I think it's a resource that I want somebody who's in the position to say, guys, you're right, we need to figure out a way to get these people up here. These are people that would represent our sport very well on a national front.
Well, you got Amos, you got Tom Amos. Come on, everybody. Hey, Amos, yeah. Amos is the engine of the train.
I got a lot of respect for Amos. He's a big guy. But
no, I'm kidding.
Talk about how much I like Vito and Lucas. Amos does a good job. He's very well spoken, and he's a good handicapper. And said, and that goes to my big point of everything, is like, you know, I think Amos is a great handicapper, and I think that the people we have up there are great handicappers. I'm not so sure about Lucas or Zito's handicapping, but I know that fans relate to them. And yeah. I think we're missing a whole different audience constantly feeding handicappers instead of feeding fans. Fans can become handicappers. It's hard to make a handicapper a fan.
Well, the horse players, the horse players are the horse players, and anything, any way to feed into that arena is good. And if it, the personalities, I mean, we've said this so many times, between the riders and the trainers, the accessibility, the owners. I mean, they don't all have to be celebrities, but, there's a lot of owners that can, present the game. And, we have an underutilized resource in this arena. I've never understood, considering when you think about the team sports, Ron, the public can't, get to and go right up to, NFL coaches and major league sport, players in racing. I mean, right now we can't, but, Saratoga, Del Mar, Keeneland, the vacation tracks and the seasonal tracks, the boutique meets, it's an unbelievable opportunity to interact. I mean, you can go up to any horseman, not while they're busy, but, after a race, maybe when they're, they've done for the day, you can approach them, autograph, converse, and, questions and answers. It's amazing.
I get to have lunch and dinners with a lot of these guys. And, I've been to breakfast with, Zito, Asmussen, Lucas, and I can tell you that the public really likes to hear from these guys. They come up, and I've never been anywhere in Arkansas for breakfast with one of those guys that we weren't constantly dealing with somebody walking up and wanting to, you know, run right over me to get to them and ask for their autographs. And I always joke with them, you know, Lucas, a quick funny story. Lucas and I drove to this event one night, and it was snowy, and Lucas has got this big fancy Range Rover, and he's driving like he's okay if he dies. I mean, he's driving crazy, and I'm scared to death, and there's cars stalled out trying to make it up icy spots in the road, and he's going around them on the shoulder, just speeding up and looking at them like they're crazy. And I said, Mr. Lucas, please, you need to calm down. This is ridiculous. He goes, oh, don't be so scared. And I said, look, the worst thing in the world besides dying in this car with you tonight would be the fact that whenever the obituary comes out and they do the report of our deaths, it's going to say Hall of Fame trainer Dwayne Lucas, winner of this many races and this many derbies and this many and passenger passed away. I said, I don't want my obituary to be a you know, an afterthought. So please slow down. And he loved it. And he didn't slow down, but he did laugh. He brings it up.
So all great. Oh, my God. And passenger. Amazing. I don't want to get you. I don't want to get you worked up, but you talk about this and frankly, you talk about going out to eat. And Ronnie, there's a sad anniversary. You were on the show 3 years ago today, as it happens. And I was reminded of it this morning with Facebook memories. And right now you're thinking, you know, what were we talking about? And it was Lynn Whiting, of course.
Yeah.
And
what a man.
3 years ago yesterday.
He was, you know, that's the deal. If we promote those kind of people, and God bless Lynn and rest in peace. But Lynn was a true racetracker. He wasn't someone that was ever going to be anything but a racetracker. He only spoke racetrack, and we all gravitated towards him. And he was very friendly, and we spent a lot of time. We would go do our Tuesday lunches together, and I enjoy that part of the game, you know, because of respect and the admiration I have for those type of people, but especially Mr. Whiting, more than anything. That in the animals is what keeps me in it. And, you know, I've had so many good times and so much appreciation. And, you know, I had a deal pop up on my phone the other day that was a picture, the last picture that I took of Lynn Whiting. I knew it was coming, you know, and it's a weird deal because he's tough and he's strictly a horse guy, and he's talking about his horses and needing a race and whatever. But Pat Day come in town, I think, to make sure that he was at ease, that Lynn was ready to go spiritually. And I was able to get a picture of that conversation, which I knew that Pat come from Louisville, his home in Louisville, to Hot Springs to make sure that he offered some sort of spiritual comfort to Lynn. And I was able to sneak around and get that picture, and that picture showed up on my deal the other day. I've never posted it or whatever, but I was super proud that I have that. And that's the last picture. And then like three or four days after that, he went to Louisville, and then we, you know, we know what happened from there. But what a man, you know. That's he left his mark, and he left it the right way. He won the races he's supposed to. He affected the people he was supposed to, and he did his job.
Now, and I'll put up. When I put up the picture I do in the listing, I've got that wonderful picture I took of the three of you, Lynn and Hobby and you. And that'll be the picture, you know, accompanying today's show listing. I wanted to give you a chance to remember Lynn today. It's 3 years, 3 years ago.
Lynn the Riddler. He's the only one that I know that could speak English and make people around it wasn't from the racetrack wonder where he was from or if he had something wrong with him. If he didn't like his seat at the restaurant, he would tell him he wanted to redraw. And, you know, if he's trying to, I'll never forget the guy, a waitress come up and tried to sell us dessert after the meal. And she said, can I interest you in some cheesecake? And he said, no, my wife's got me on shavings. And Hobby and I looked at each other, and Jinx Byers was there. And we looked at each other and was like, somebody's got to tell this poor lady what he means, you know. And I just kept a straight face, and I said, well, yeah, he's not going to be having dessert. So it was, that's just how he was. And that's, it wasn't an act, it's just how he was.
Unbelievable. Ron, before I let you go and wrap up, we should mention the win on Friday. In the rainbow as well, right? For John Ed.
Well, no, John Ed won the rainbow race.
Oh, he won the girls' race. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
And congratulations to him. And Wilby does a great job for them. I had a horse for J.R. and Rita Young, some owners from Van Buren, Arkansas.
Yes.
And their horse's name is Man in the Can. It's probably one of the greatest names ever. And was very happy that it worked out the right way, and that's the second stake in 3 years that we've won for these, the same type of deal that we've won for these connections, and they breed a good horse, they buy a good horse, and they send it to me with this kind of expectations, and I love to deliver on that kind of deal because it means a lot to them. That's their big race, and we want to win it.
Well done. And in fact, I just reached for the chart. Sakani was the Rainbow Miss winner, and Man in the Can, Joel Rosario too aboard for this, and took a bunch of money.
We needed a rider, and we found one. He was available. So I told everybody. I joked around with my owner. I said, "Listen, Cabrera's stuck over at Will Rogers. We can't bring him in. I've got this guy, I think they say he's all right, his name's Rosario." And my owner didn't catch it at first, and he goes, who? I said, he's a pretty good guy. I mean, he wins some races, and he'll come ride for us. And I kept him going for a little bit because I like to do that. And finally I said, it's Joel Rosario. And he goes, oh, hell yeah. I mean, why did you say that? I'm like, okay.
I love it. I want to mention one other win, too, because Prodigious Bay's win a couple of days before, too. What do you think? This is a Maryland bred for the Sellers, and you might have something here.
Yeah, I expect him to be a fun horse. He's got some ability, and, you know, I was very happy that the Sellers let me buy him. That was a time whenever, you know, I was going through treatments, and there wasn't a whole lot of people wanting to invest or stay invested with me, not knowing, and it's fine because you didn't know where my health was and whatever, but they said that if I saw something that they would buy it, and I got a good deal, I thought, on this horse, and I told them, you know, they want to do well at Oakland, and I said he will win at Oakland, and I went out on it and kind of did like Babe Ruth pointing to the bleachers, and whenever, the first time I ran, I was just, you know, punched in the gut. I thought he would win, and that just shows you why we're wrong sometimes, you know. And then when he run his next out and he won like that, it was great for me on a bunch of levels.
You know, I don't know if you got the fig from anybody. That was an 85 buyer that he came back with.
Yeah, we have confidence that he's still learning. He's still putting it together. One of those things where, you know, timing is hard to get. You know, some of these young ones got to mature, and if you do right by them and let them mature, they stay around longer at their rate, you know. And so I've been trying to push him and get him to mature without you know, obviously putting him in any harm's way, and he's just now the light's coming on. So it may work out that all this,
you know, uncertainty in scheduling may make it to where we get a shot to make some good races later on this fall.
Well, and even, yeah, at this point, I mean, that was the third career start, and mile and a 16th, it was in the wet, and, you know, just looking from a pedigree standpoint, a Bayern out of a Fupeg mare, she's phenomenal, that I think Hollendorfer trained, happens to be... just happens to be a Maryland bred, and that didn't you know, take away at all. Where'd you buy this horse, actually?
Bought Timonium? Faye Seed Timonium, and we do well at that sale. We've been able to get a couple decent horses out of there, and actually Lynn Whiting was the first person that took me to that sale, believe it or not. But we've done very well. And I'm glad. I thought that horse was worth a lot more than what we had to give for it, which makes me very happy. And he showed the other day that he's a quality horse that has a lot of potential.
Well, Ron, the meet's running down. I see you got some modest starters later this week. What else are you going to run between now and the end of the meet?
Well, we're hoping that we get to run, you know, Firecrow, which is a good horse that's coming around the right way. We've got Seven Nation Army that's improving with every race. You know, we've got Subiaco and that's won her last two. I mean, we've got some good stuff. We don't have a whole lot of you know, names that's gonna jump on everyone's radar, but these are quality horses that's gonna pay their way and somebody else's. And if they keep improving, you'll get to hear about them on some Saturdays. So that's what we got coming up, and then we'll see what 2-year-olds shake out. You know, we're 2-year-olds aren't allowed at Oaklawn, so we're waiting to see where we go, to see what kind of 2-year-olds we get coming in. And you know, so there's going to be some fun the next 2 weeks. We're going to try to. My goal is, you know, we have a limited number of horses. Compared to the people that we have to compete against, some of them. And we always want to be in the top five at Oaklawn if we can. And that's where I want to be.
Well, Ron, a highlight feels like here as the meet winds down, the highlight is going to be the wins from Whitmore, and on a 3-race win streak again, longest of his career, other than his big run that he made 3 into 4, and it's just a testimony to you and the staff and the way he's been handled. He's a favorite of many, many people. Every time he comes out, and he, you know, he continues to win fans, and I'm going to guess that a lot of people have stopped trying to bet against him, especially when it comes to these winter starts in Hot Springs.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I don't mind, because I always bet my horses, so I appreciate their difference of opinion when they don't choose us, and then we just kind of hope that we prove them wrong when we get a shot.
Finally, Ronnie, you did mention the allusion to you know, the health issue that you know, had you know, having to be very cautious. The situation we're dealing with now, how has that affected you, and are you, you know, particularly and acutely careful with you know, given the immunity issues?
Yeah, I have to be. I have to be very careful right now, but you know, geographically where I'm at, I get to do my job. I get to see what I need to see and do what I need to do. And then I stay put up. I'm kind of like under house arrest, and you know, I come to the fence and watch and talk to the jockeys and watch training. And, you know, I do all my stuff that we're able to do. We've been very lucky. I think we've had like our last 11, I think we've won 5. You know, so we're carrying on. I've got a crew that we got a way of doing things that works out very good. So whenever I take these little, have to go and be put up, it just rocks right along. My wife and my assistant trainer both probably think it's better when I'm not there. So But we're having fun, and you know, everybody out there has to be careful. You know, not for how it may affect them, but how it may affect the next person that
they
come to. And I think that people get that, and I'm lucky that I'm in Arkansas, where, you know, although there's nothing to do here whenever everything's normal, this is a pretty cool spot to be whenever you need to be put up. And I can motivate around my yard and do my job, and then I go to go read whatever I need to read and work on whatever I need to work on, and then get ready for the races and go back to my yard and watch the races.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. And Ron, I'm glad I brought it up, because for those that don't want to seem to acknowledge the practicalities and realities of this, you know, Ron, the kind of person who is susceptible, and John Nichols, you know, with one lung, somebody that is susceptible. Think about those around you, and people you might actually know who could easily be felled by corona if they were to be infected. Ron, so happy for you and for the team involved with Whitmore. It's a dream for everybody. I'll ask the final question that I said I was going to ask you. Is there a bittersweetness involved in having a horse like this with no way to know if another one as good will ever come along?
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. I would say this: we wake up every morning to take care of whatever we have and to try to get them to this level. And whenever you have one like this, it's really good, but you're constantly looking for the next one. And there may not ever be another Whitmore come in our barn, but who knows? I guess you could say the same thing. I remember him talking about Ed Grimley with Bob Baffert. You know, I think he's made it okay since then. And 36 Red with Zito, you know, I think that was going to be their big shot, and then the next thing you know, it jumps up and it becomes something else. And Whitmore's always going to hold, you know, a huge portion of my heart and my barn and everybody, my family that's associated and everything. But he's going to be there regardless. And now what we'll have to do is prepare for the fact that one day, whenever he's 20 or whenever it is we retire him, that that we'll have to put somebody in that stall and give them the opportunity to see what they can do to reach their potential. So it's but that's good. You know, the only thing better than having one Whitmore is figuring out a way to have two or three.
Ron Moquette, everybody, you can follow Ron. Ron's got two Twitter accounts, Ron Moquette, just his name, and then Moquette Racing, and one of the game's nicest and most well-liked and admired horsemen. Well done, and thanks for this. This was really fun.
Thanks for having me. Hey, if you can get a chance to come here, they're running the race on May 2nd. I think it's going to be pretty good here. So you might want to, you know, just pick out a spot in the stands. There's nobody around, and you can do your show from there, and then we can take funny pictures of you. Just let me know.
You know, it's funny because between Nancy and Jen Hoyt and, you know, the people, the marketing people, they said, you know, because I was planning on coming, of course, for the Arkansas Derby. And they said, Steve, are you coming for Derby now? And I said, I don't know how I don't know how I would really manage it. Let's give it another week or time. I think I've got $1,000 in Southwest credits from the flights that were all canceled. So it wouldn't be hard to jump a flight, I suppose, to come broadcast for a couple of days ahead of the Arkansas Derby. And you know what? Tina's free.
I mean, I can't see a reason why you wouldn't want to be at this 14 horse field that is run on a day that you didn't have any plans since Churchill had to cancel.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you search in your heart and figure out what's the right thing to do, and we'll probably see you around.
Unbelievable. All right. Now, see, you're now he's put a burr under the saddle. Ron Moquette, Ron, thank you. This was
Thanks
great.
Thanks for having me.
Unbelievable. Ron Moquette. Just might as well, he can figuratively drop the mic. Unbelievable visit. Let's take a break. Hour three upon us. Johnny D, I hope Johnny didn't mind waiting an hour. I don't think he had anything else to do, really. I don't know. Gail might want him to clean the gutters. That's about the only other thing, right? We'll find out. Johnny B joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void to prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
If you are racing two-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow. What other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success.
At a place like this,
nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Sirius XM Sports presents